Time to talk to Fox Sports number one commentator for soccer in this country, Simon Hill, is on the line. G'day, Simon.
How are you, Kev? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad.
Now, you've written the wish list for Australian soccer for 2017. Now, let's go through some of the things that you've come up with, Simon, because I remember your man has been around the game for a long time. When you first started calling the game in this country, be fair to say it wasn't anywhere near the position it holds in the sporting ranks these days.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. And I think I'll put that at the end of my piece today. Sometimes we do have to, you know, remember that we've come an awful long way. But as football fans, obviously, we're very impatient. We want the game to progress, and we want it to progress quickly. And we all have wish lists. And, of course, you know, when the year changes, we normally tend to think about those lists. So that's why I've written it today. And I'm sure that most people will disagree with at least some of it.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, and you don't want to, opinions are neither right nor wrong. They're
That's
simply
right.
opinions.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to, one of the things that from outside the game, people who follow other games and then come and watch soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, the diving thing is the one thing that people immediately from other sort of sports go, nah, that's sooky behaviour. It's not on. We won't cop that. We won't watch a sport where that's tolerated. And the truth is soccer doesn't want to tolerate it either.
No, no, absolutely right. Well, look, this is what I've written today. Number two on my wish list is end the hysteria on diving. And I've written thus. Yes, we're all irritated by the simulation that's crept into the A-League and it needs to be eradicated. But I'm also equally tired of the moral outrage about Australian values on the sporting field.
Right.
You mean like sledging opponents about their weight or their wife, cricket? You mean like belting seven bells out of each other, the public or their girlfriends, league? You mean like throwing bananas from the stands at black players or regular run-ins with the law over illicit drugs, AFL? Well, if those are the values we're aspiring to, then I will take the odd bit of simulation, thanks. It might be embarrassing and against the rules, but at least it's not an actual crime.
No, that's a very, very good point. But it does look bad, and we've had a couple during this the recent weeks of the A-League you know, Fernando Brandon from City has been pillared from, you know, from A to B about his little antics. In the scheme of things, where do you see it?
I'm with you. I don't like it. I wish we could get rid of it. The fact is that whenever you get a sporting contest, players will try to cheat. And I'm afraid that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's cheating. But there are different forms of cheating. And my point with this is not that I'm defending divers. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination. I'm fed up to the back teeth of them.
Yeah.
And I think I actually said during one of my calls when Fernando Brandão rolled around that he did a triple Selco and a you know, backspin as well and cut it out. But the fact is, whenever these things are then discussed subsequently in the media in Australia, because of the fact that football has a bit of stigma around it, we end up talking about the game itself. And this is why I don't like soccer. Well, you know what? One of the reasons I don't like AFL is because I don't like the racism that comes from the stands, but I don't accuse everybody of being racist because they go and watch AFL. And that's unfortunately what tends to happen when these things occur.
Yep.
And they're not quite as widespread as people would have you believe. Yeah, Brandon's been fingered because he's done it once or twice, but you know, this is in the context of how many games we had this season? 60, 70 games. So I'm just asking for a little bit of perspective, that's all. But in terms of the actual issue, of course we want to get rid of it.
Yeah, we see someone throw a punch in AFL, doesn't mean everybody throws a punch.
Oh, that's right. Well, and the thing is, Kev, is that it's normally then described, oh, a bit of a stoush.
Yes.
Or we had a bit of a blue, or it was a bit of a stink on, you know? Well, actually, no, violence. You know, if you did that in the street, you get arrested for it. Now, if you dived in the street, people would go, look at that prat. But you wouldn't get arrested for it, and yet the punch is seen as okay, the diving's not. Do you take my point?
Yeah, no, I get your point. But also there's that other part of the point where people think that soccer is sort of being very...
Is what?
Well...
So you're tiptoeing around the edges here. And this is the whole point I'm trying to make. We go back to this Sheila's Wogs and Pufters mentality of it's unmanly. Well, is being a man throwing a punch? Is being a man being able to take a punch? Is that the measure of being a man?
Oh, no, absolutely
for me,
not.
Not.
Yeah. No, well, I agree with you.
But that's defended as being manly Whereas diving, which I equally abhor, by the way, I don't like it, but there's some connotation with, I don't know, homosexuality even, you know, which is not right.
No, I agree.
There's a faux homophobia that sort of creeps into this, and a little bit of racism, and so it's a bigger issue than just.
Do you not think we've got
diving on the pitch,
Simon? Do you think we haven't gone past that a little bit though? Do you still think we're reverting back to that where we think blokes who played, you know, back 30 years ago, you might have probably copped it a lot more where, you know, he plays soccer because he's a Nancy boy?
Well, the problem is, I'll give you a little example, Kev. Yeah. I was at a New Year's Eve party in Sydney where I live this New Year's Eve, just gone. And I got talking, as you do, to, you know, people who you've not met before at a party. And, yeah, you know, people have had a couple of drinks and I get all that. And this very nice lady, who's about 50-odd years of age, came up to me and said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a football commentator. And she said, by your accent, does that mean soccer? Which I thought, oh, that's all right. I don't care people call it soccer. I call it football. And, you know, I respect people's right to call it soccer so long as they respect my right to call it football. I said, yeah, it's the round ball game. She said, yeah, that's always been the gay sport of Australia, hasn't it?
Oh, really? Oh, jeez.
Now, you see, you laughed instinctively at that. Maybe through shock, I don't know. But that's a reaction that I get quite a lot. There's a knee-jerk reaction to it. Now, maybe if you work in other sports, you don't see that. Or you think that, you know, we somehow exaggerate this. But when you work in the sport that I do, I have to put up with this an awful lot. And football fans, by and large, have to put up with it an awful lot. And one of the great things at how football or soccer, whatever you want to call it, has grown in the last 10 years and what it's allowed us to do is to say, you know what, enough of this. We've had a belly full of this stuff. If you want to talk about specific incidents like diving, no problem.
Yep.
Talk about how to improve the game. Brilliant. I'll talk all day with you. But if you want to use it as an excuse for this faux homophobia or to talk about, you know, people who aren't real men, well, I'm sorry, that's where we're going to go off at a tangent. And I will stand up for what I believe in, and the game will stand up for itself because it has to. And it can now because we're big enough to be able to do that.
I would like to think, in all honesty, that I laugh because that shocked me, because I thought we were past that. I didn't think we still referred.
We're not.
Well, that's a bloody great pity, and that's a shame, and that should not be the case, because I'm a massive fan of sport in general, but I'm a massive fan of soccer as a game, no matter what you call it. It's a great game. It is a game of enormous skills. It's a game where there's enormous courage shown by a lot of people playing that game. There's no way known that you could even talk to
them. I'm not pointing the finger at you specifically.
No, I know honest, that.
I was like you. I'm like you on a lot of these occasions. When people say those things to me, it almost takes my breath away, and I don't really know how to react. But these situations crop up an awful lot more often than they should do, maybe less than they did 12, 13 years ago when I arrived in the country. In fact, that's certainly true, which is good. But they still do happen, and this is why we do have to tackle these things head on. And people think we're being oversensitive and you're paranoid and stop playing the victim. Well, actually, no, we have to change these attitudes. And it's not just about football, soccer per se. These are about societal attitudes. And the fact that lady who I spoke to on New Year's Eve, who otherwise, by the way, was a very, I won't tell you what she did, but, you know, she was a very successful, wealthy lady in her own right, obviously intelligent, educated. Yep. And yet that was the first thing that came out of her mouth when I mentioned football. Yeah. And that's the stigma that we have to get rid of.
Yeah, that's I must admit that absolutely gobsmacks me because
me too.
I thought we were past that. I thought we'd gone well past that, and no. to a point where I thought actually we had an appreciation, even coming from dyed-in-the-wool hardcore Aussie rules fans, of what a good game and a skillful game that soccer is.
I think many people do what you just said, but I think there is a significant element, and I do think it's egged on by certain sections of the media because maybe they have, you know, vested interests at stake in other sports, or because they have a particular prejudice, or because they've grown up in a different era when those attitudes were acceptable. I'm not just talking about football, soccer either. I'm talking about, you know, the homophobia and what is a real man and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you do have to move with the times. There are reasons why we don't allow black people to be called certain words anymore.
Yep.
You know, once upon a time, that was acceptable. That's not anymore. And that's society saying, you know what, we've moved on from that and we're going to change. And unfortunately, in football, for whatever reason, and obviously I wasn't around 60 years ago in this country, but you know, this sport has grown up with a lot of that stigma attached to it, and it's still there. It's not as much as it was, but it's still there.
Is the ethnic stigma still there in the sport? Do you see that as well?
Well, yeah, I think that's all part of it. You know, again, I won't give you the TV network, but I remember not so very long ago, and we're talking in the 2000s here, when I went to work on a big sporting event that was being shared with another network. I wasn't at Fox Sports, and you can probably join the dots on this one, but
yep.
It was a few years ago, and I was calling the Oli Roos, the men's football team. They were playing at the Olympics in Athens, and the Matildas as well, the women's team who were playing there. And I lost count of the number of times that I'd heard the word wog ball used.
Yep.
It's only the wogs playing. Who cares? Well,
the wogs and poms, I think, was when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the pom thing is another. I have to deal with that a lot as well, being English. So,
yes.
You know, and all these things as an immigrant to a country, and I'm talking about the wider context again here, not just a sporting thing, but, you know, they do make you feel very, very alienated. And not particularly part of the society that you're trying to join. So, it can have intrinsic cohesion problems as well. And I'm not saying that's everybody by any stretch of the imagination. It's not. In fact, I would say that, you know, the vast majority of people are perfectly fine and have an interest in football and don't have those prejudices. But there is a significant minority. And it just seems as though football is the sport that brings all those horrific things to the fore, and it still shocks me even today. There are times when I hear things and I think, did you really just say that?
Yeah,
because
no,
otherwise I've had a perfectly nice, reasonable conversation with you, and all of a sudden it's like you've scraped off a scab and this ugly underbelly has been revealed.
Simon Hill from Fox Sports, the number one soccer commentator in the country, or football commentator in the country, as I should call him. Hey, Simon, I just want to read you a couple of SMSs we received in the last 10 or 15 minutes since we've been having a chat. What rubbish is this bloke crapping on about? Next one. Simon Hill is spot on with the gay connotations that come with soccer. Hear, hear, you're a legend. We need more people standing up for the world game. Next one. Grow up, mate, you're a joke. Next one. Love both games. Attitudes are changing, albeit slowly. It's a polarising topic of conversation, isn't it?
I expected it to be.
Yeah, I knew you'd.
It normally is when you hold strong opinions.
Yep.
But, look, that's fine. You know, I won't back down on what I think. It's an opinion column. I'm not saying it's fact. It's my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people are free to agree or disagree with it.
And it's hard to find a case for the supporters of the actual supporters of the game when they themselves can't seem to get their act together to actually support, to unify enough to support a team.
Well, that's one of the things on my wish list. Yeah, I'm a little bit perplexed by what's going on with the Melbourne Victory fans at the moment, or at least a certain section of them.
Yeah.
It appears that a few that I can only assume used to be in the North Terrace, the group that's now disbanded, have taken to booing some of their fellow supporters if they dare to sing. That, at least that's my reading on it, unless I've got that horribly wrong.
Yeah, no, I think that's
what I hear when I'm at Victory games. Now, I understand why there's a bit of angst, because the NT chose to disband because they've had a disagreement with the club, and of course the security authorities. We know all about the history. But really, as I've written in the piece, that was their decision to disband. If they don't want to reform, then what right have they got to tell other supporters what to do when they're cheering their team on? If other fans want to chant and sing, that's up to them.
Yes.
And if you don't like it, go home.
Yeah, no, exactly. What's not on your wish list is for the fans of the game to actually, make the whole experience for everyone about watching the game and not about, I guess, watching them and the antics they do and the things they bring to the game?
Well, yeah, that's not quite right, Kev. Look, I love the active supporter groups, and I love the noise and the colour that they bring. Providing they're acting within the law, yeah. I have no issue with it. In fact, I actively encourage it because I think a lot of people do come to the football for that unique flavour, that atmosphere that a lot of those active fans provide. The issue that we had is a very small minority of them thought that, you know, it became all about them and yep. they could freely do what they want and break the law. Well, no, I'm sorry, you can't. Nobody can. So we can't defend those people, but...
Are they the game's biggest sort of enemy, self, you know, doing more damage to the game than anything else?
Well, certainly not this season. I mean, I don't think we've seen hardly... I should touch wood here, but I don't think we've seen a lot of incidents this season. I think
no, we haven't.
You know, mainly been rooted out, these guys. But yeah, I mean, they were an issue. There's no doubt about that, albeit, as I say, very small in number. But again, you know, small in number doesn't always correlate to the headlines they generate if the pictures are big enough. And unfortunately, you know, they were creating huge headlines, which it seems as though they wanted because, you know, if it is all about them, well, I'm sorry. The game is bigger than you. It's about football for me and most of the other people. If you want to come along and make noise and colour on the back of that, fantastic. More power to you.
Yep.
If you're going to use it as a vehicle to go and break the law and have a run-in with the police, well, sorry, go somewhere else.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very valid point. Hey, the Brisbane pitch the other week, Suncorp was to say the least, it was bloody disgraceful. It looked awful on television. I'm told from all reports that it was awful to play on. We've got to be better than that, haven't we?
Yeah, that's on the wish list too.
Yep.
Action on pitches. And not just, you know, having a whinge about it, but... backing that up by actually withdrawing money from stadium. You know, we pay good money, same as other sporting clubs do, to hire venues which are supposed to provide facilities that are good enough for us to use. Well, you know, this is like walking into a shop and buying some faulty goods. What would you do? You take your receipt, you go back and you say, I want a refund. Now, we seem to cop all this week in, week out during the football season. They give us trash pitches to play on up and down the country. Not all of them, but some of them. And we pay for it through the nose. Are we serious?
Yeah.
You know, we've got to start withdrawing checks from these people if they don't provide what it says on the tin.
Now, speaking of checks, we're about to open the January transfer window. We've already seen a little bit of action already. We're expecting this to be a very busy January transfer window. What do you want to see happen in that transfer area?
Well, what I'd like to see, particularly with Australian players, is Australian clubs get value for money via the transfer market. Now, no Australian club is ever going to stand in the way of a player who wants to go overseas and try and better himself in terms of his wages or you know, his development as a footballer. But there is a transfer market at play, and I think in the past we've been all too willing to let our younger top stars go virtually for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, this came to the fore, I think it was about 18 months ago, where Manchester United signed a young English star called Wilfred Zaha, and they paid Crystal Palace, I think it was about £20 million. That's about $30-odd million for him. Now, this was a young kid who hadn't even played for his national team yet. So he played in the Championship, the second tier. Now, by comparison, we're letting some of our youngsters go overseas, and I'm not saying they're exactly the same category, but... You know, a Jamie McLaren, who at the moment is being very heavily linked with a move away from Brisbane.
Yep.
And the fee that Brisbane are likely to get for him is, I don't know, maybe about $300,000 or $400,000. It's absolute peanuts. Now, what I'd like clubs to do is be a bit tougher in their contract negotiations with these players in the first instance and say, look, if you leave after 6 months or 12 months, here's the sell-on fee. Or here is the release fee clause. And it's $1 million because that's how highly we value you. And I think that protects the player as well because if you're, for example, a Man United and you go and sign Jamie McLaren tomorrow for $300,000, what is $300,000 to Man United? Nothing.
Yeah, nothing, yeah.
So if he succeeds, if he fails, does it really matter? If you have to pay $1 million or $2 million, it might just make them think a little bit more carefully. So that protects the player as well.
Yep. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Stefan Walk's the example that you use in the article, and and that's obviously $400,000 for him, and he's proved to be a he's proved to be a very good player when he's gone, and he's been overseas. The expansion of the competition, where does that sit with you and your wish list?
Well, what we need is the criteria.
Aren't we getting one of those in a couple of weeks?
Apparently, yeah. I just hope that the FFA, once they do come out with it, stick with it. You know, if, for example, and we're hearing at the moment that Tasmania is, you know, perhaps the most advanced of any of the bids that are out there. Yeah, I don't know that for sure, but that's what I'm hearing.
I've had them in the studio. We've talked to them about it. Yes, they do look very, very, very well prepared.
They've got financial backing. They've got state government support. If they tick all the boxes, then they must be in. And it shouldn't really matter what part of the country they're from. So I just hope that, you know, we're not going to see some small print from the FFA that says, you know, in case of we decide that we don't want to go to Tasmania, we reserve the right not to take it there. I think it's got to be, you know, one size fits all, and then everybody knows where they stand and what they've got to aim for to get in the league.
Yep. I had Damien Murray on yesterday talking about, obviously, Berisha breaking the goal record and all that. But one of the parts of the conversation I had with him is he actually thinks we should have 18 teams and that we should open the doors for another, you know, five or six teams to come in the competition because he thinks Australian young players are missing out on the opportunity to play in the A-League.
Mm. Well, ultimately, I agree with him. Okay. Maybe not in, you know, the next 12 months, but I certainly think we should be adding two more clubs in a season or two and then another two, maybe, you know, two or three years after that. We've got to get with the program of having an expanded competition. We've had 10 teams. We started with 8. The most we've had is 11, and we've been 10 for the last 4 years. We've also got to, somewhere down the line, look at having a national second division and ultimately promotion and relegation. I know that sounds like pie in the sky, but, you know, this is what our game is about. And if we want to prepare players to play in big international tournaments as well, we've got to have the pressure cooker games, the relegation battles, the battles as well as the battles at the top of the table. At the moment, if for example, you're a Mariners, and this happened last year, and you're 10, 15 points behind the rest, there's no punishment. So there is no punishment for failure. How is that preparing young players for success on the international stage?
And how's it's making not. Clubs make themselves better?
Correct. Yeah, there needs to be punishment, not reward, for finishing last. Now, I know in other codes of football, I think this is the case in the AFL, that you actually get rewarded with a better draft pick, don't you, if you finish bottom?
Yes, you do.
Which to me just sounds the most ludicrous thing in the world, that you get rewarded for failure.
It's based on the American model where that's exactly what happens in most American sports, where the bottom team gets the top pick and the top team gets the bottom pick.
But how does that, Kev, explain to me, how does that improve a club, particularly if they know they're out of the running for, I don't know, the top four or whatever? Do they not then think, well, you know what, it might be better to finish bottom this season?
Well, you're bringing the tanking argument into it, which is one that sends everybody off on a tangent here. So yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Different discussion,
yeah,
but yes,
yeah, anyway. Exactly. The game is in better shape. The thing that is, and you mentioned it in your wish list, Asia has to be where we're heading, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we are in Asia. We compete in the Asian Football Confederation, but we still don't, in my opinion, make enough of those links. We've got this giant continent to the north, and in part it's not our fault, because I do think the AFC could do more as well, particularly to promote its flagship competition, the Asian Champions League, which they should be aiming to make on a par with its European version. I know that will take a long time, but if you look at what China is doing at the moment and the amount of money that's slopping around the Chinese Super League, they're investing so much money in top stars, Carlos Tevez being one of the latest ones to arrive, which is tremendous for the region. But what is the AFC doing to leverage their Champions League on the back of that? And as a nation, you know, ourselves, we should also be trying to align ourselves with China much more than we are at the moment. Now, the example I use, and it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, and I'm sure the AFL fans won't thank me for it, but, you know, when China is putting all this money into football on the back of a football-loving president, what does Australia do? We send two AFL teams over there. to play a code of football they don't understand. When really we should be trying to attract, you know, their big clubs to partner up with our clubs over here, or set up academies in Australia, or invest in the A-League, which, to be fair, one or two have done already. And instead, we're still thinking parochially rather than globally.
Globally, yeah. Yeah, that's the advantage that everyone's always talked about, that that soccer has over AFL, is that global thing. And if ever,
we have to make it count, Kev.
Exactly. Well, exactly what I was about to say. If it's been said to me, I reckon, a million times, if they ever get their act together in soccer, AFL footy's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we still have to, it's all very well saying these things, but we still have to act upon them and, you know, make sure that those advantages hit home. And at the moment, I still don't think we're doing that. And just on one more thing on the Asian Confederation, which I haven't written as part of my wish list. Yeah. We do actually need the plus one rule. I don't know if you're aware of this, but virtually every country in Asia is allowed 3, 4, or 5 foreign players plus one AFC registered player. Now, we don't have that rule in Australia because the clubs don't want it. They'd much prefer to go shopping in Europe and South America. I understand it. But we've got to become closer with Asia. We can't just be part of it for our own benefit. And this would actually be a way of showing Asia that we value their game. Maybe then they'll value ours as well.
That's a really good idea. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, well, it's been on the table for a long time. The FFA wants to bring it in because it knows the value of it politically. But unfortunately, the clubs have fought against it for a long time because, as I say, they pay lip service to Asia.
Yeah, no, it's silly. Simon, great to catch up. Thanks for your time. The wish list article that you've written is on the Fox Sports website, foxsports.com.au. Look forward to your work this coming weekend, as usual. Which game you got this weekend?
I've got Adelaide Victory on the Saturday and then Mariners Sydney on the Sunday. So two great games.
No, terrific. Good calling. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much, Kev. Thanks for plugging the article. Much appreciated.
Not a problem. It's certainly generated some traffic here on our SMS machine. I think you've blown it up. Good on you, Simon. Thanks for that. Kev. Simon Hill from Fox Sports. Catch him calling on the weekend. He is the best in the business, I've got to say. Love listening to his work.